99.9 FM W260C V Racine and 98.1 FM W251BU Kenosha.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Matt Piper in Manchester, New Hampshire, where it's decision day statewide.
I'm a Nikki Haley endorser.
I'm hoping for a major win for Donald Trump.
There are 22 delegates at stake for Republicans, but because the state is running its primary ahead of the calendar set by the Democratic National Committee, there likely won't be any Democratic delegates awarded after today's vote. And while Louise is a Biden supporter,
maybe some of his advisors will say, you know, you've done a great job, and I think he has. But he did say at one time that he would be a one-term president when he first started running.
She thinks he should step aside and let other Democrats join the race. I'm Matt Piper in Manchester, New Hampshire. Now with more CBS News, here's Deborah Rodriguez.
President Biden and Vice President Harris will make their first joint campaign appearance of the year today in Virginia. Their focus, abortion rights.
We need the American people to keep making their voices heard. So congressional Republicans finally get the message.
Israel's military is reporting its worst day of losses since the war with Hamas began. CBS's Linda Gradstein says 21 soldiers were killed in central Gaza.
The Israeli army spokesman Daniel Hagari said troops had wired two-story buildings with explosives to blow them up near the Israeli border. As far as we know, an RPG was fired by terrorists at a tank securing the forces, and simultaneously an explosion occurred in the buildings, Hagari said.
The IDF says three soldiers were killed in a separate incident. Investigators say the manhunt for a suspect wanted in the killings of eight people in suburban Chicago is over after a 23-year-old shot himself to death near San Antonio, Texas. Joliet, Illinois Police Chief Bill Evans.
At this time, we do not have any motive. Obviously, this is an ongoing investigation. We're deeply entrenched in this.
He says the suspect knew the victims. The Supreme Court has ruled Border Patrol agents can cut razor wire installed by the state of Texas at the border with Mexico. CBS News legal contributor Jessica Levinson.
It's not the end of the story. This case will still be litigated. This is not a decision on the merits. This is a decision based on an emergency application.
On NBA TV.
Here comes Embiid rolling into the cup.
Philadelphia's Joel Embiid scored a team record 70 points in last night's win over the Spurs. Karl Anthony Towns followed with 62 points, a career and a franchise high in the Timberwolves' loss to the Hornets. It's the fourth time in NBA history two players have scored at least 60 points on the same night. This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wiggehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Hospital Sisters Health System announced Monday that they are closing two hospitals in western Wisconsin, the Sacred Heart Hospital in Eau Claire and St. Joseph's Hospital in Chippewa Falls will both close by the end of April. They say the closures are due to prolonged operational and financial stress placed on the hospitals that began with COVID. Vice President Kamala Harris was in suburban Waukesha County Monday while the legal battle over reproductive rights in Wisconsin wages on.
In a state whose motto is forward, these extremists are trying to take us backward. Well, we're not having that.
State lawmakers took testimony Monday on a bill to put a shorter window on legal abortion to a statewide referendum this spring. I'm Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
The Bucks sweep the Pistons. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks held on to win the second of two games in Detroit with a 122-113 victory over the Pistons. Giannis with a triple-double, scoring 31 points. Bucks head coach Adrian Griffin.
To pull away at the end, and these are tough games to play. you know, back to back on someone's own home court. Man, we did what we had to do, and I thought both teams, you know, played great. But I thought we, you know, we showed our character and our resiliency at the end. So it's another really good road win.
Men's college basketball: the Badgers in Minnesota tonight to face the Gophers. Wisconsin dropping two spots to 13th ranked in the nation, despite beating Indiana at home over the weekend. Marquette has moved up three spots to 14, right behind the Badgers. After the Golden Eagles won on the road against St. John 73-72, they traveled to Chicago to play DePaul on Wednesday. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
It is going to be a little messy out there today. We have a winter weather advisory in effect. Rain and snow likely off and on through the day. We could get it between a quarter and a half inch of liquid precip, maybe some minor slushy accumulation, but definitely enough to mess up the roads a bit. 35 today, 33 tonight. Warm enough for rain tomorrow. Scattered showers with a high of 38. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 33.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
News, talk, and sports.
Talk about your triple play.
Get this guy a jockstrap and a cookie.
1400 AM and 99.9 and 98.1 FM, WRJN.
I was making pancakes the other day, and a fly flew into the kitchen. And that's when I realized that a spatula is a lot like a fly swatter. And a crushed fly is a lot like a blueberry. And a roommate is a lot like a fly eater. I think it's interesting that cologne rhymes with alone. If I have to move up in a building, I choose the elevator over the escalator. Because one time I was riding the escalator and I tripped. I fell down the stairs for an hour and a half. Just kept falling. Thanks. Thanks, everybody. I think employee of the month is a good example of when a person can be a winner and a loser at the same time.
Baby, do you know what that's worth? Ooh, heaven is a place on earth. They say in heaven, love comes first. We'll make heaven our place on earth. Ooh, heaven is a place on earth.
Away to WRJN Radio. I'm Don Rosen. Thanks for joining us here on a very slick Tuesday morning. And my my guest Pippin just slid in here to the. It was slippery out there, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah. Yes.
Said, I'll pull it. Yeah. Just get behind the mic a little bit there. Okay. Perfect. Yeah. It's hard to walk. You had to walk like I did across the snow.
I did. Yes, because the pavement was so slithery.
Oh, it was terrible out there this morning. But you made it in.
I did.
I even called you this morning at 6 o'clock.
And said, you did.
Hey, don't.
And I answered.
Yeah, right. Now, I love that name, Pippin.
Thank you.
Pippin McKelly. Well, hold on. Don't say. I got it written right here phonetically. McKelly. Pippin right. McKelly. Unusual name.
Yes.
Except for the Broadway musical Pippin. I've never heard the name used before.
Scottie Pippin.
Oh, Scottie Pippin. Yeah, from the basketball player of Chicago Bulls. Scottie Pippin. Okay, so, but you're not, he's not named after you, and you're not named after him. So, Pippin, where are you from, Pippin, originally?
I'm English.
Yeah.
I was born in the middle of England. My earliest memories are the south of England. That's what I sound like, is the south of England. And then, because my father was in the army, we moved a lot. So,
what town was it in England?
What town in England? Swanage.
Swanage.
Yes.
Okay.
But before I came to America, the last 5 years, I was living in London.
Okay. Well, that's great. I think you're the first person I ever met who lived in London.
Oh, wow.
I know people
who visit. It's a great place to live.
Well, my parents visited there, but you're the first person I ever know that came from there. So what brought you to America?
A man. I'm an academic. I was giving a paper at a conference. And there was another guy there who was also giving a paper at the conference, and we met and clicked, and then I came over here to marry him.
He used a pickup line and got you to come to America, huh?
He did. He did. And that was
late. That must
have
been some line.
And that was late 1989, and I've been here ever since. So we're not still married, but I'm still here.
Okay. Well, good for you. And then what brought you to Racine? We got you to this country. Now you had to get to Wisconsin and Racine. Where did you live? Is this the first place you lived in America?
No, it's not. I arrived in Savannah, Georgia, which was a major culture shock after London. And then my husband got a job at Lake Forest. And so I came up with him, and I was teaching at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago and a little bit at Lake Forest, a little bit at Northwestern. And then when that job came to an end for him, we moved to Minnesota, and I was teaching at St. Olaf College for about 4 years. And after that, I came down here, Parkside. Actually, I got a call from Parkside saying, would I be interested in coming and teaching here? And I said, well, yes, I probably would. And so down I came, and we had hoped that job would go tenure track. It didn't. But by that time, I was so sick of moving around, and my partner at the time had a New York salary working from home. And I said, look, why don't we just stay here? Because we've got a great setup here, and we couldn't have it anywhere else in the world. And so I'm still here. He died 10 years ago, but I'm still here. No, it's all right. It was a long time ago.
Now, give me some of your academic background, because I'm looking at it here, and you did more than just graduate from college. So give us some of the... You've been around here working at different universities.
Yes, I have. I did the 60s bit and dropped out of school before graduating high school. And then I was a mature student as an undergraduate. I mean, not very mature, but they called me that. And fell in love with art history and architectural history, and decided I couldn't bear to stop studying this. And so I did some graduate work, and I was teaching locally in England while I was doing that. I've done lots of stuff, actually. I've worked in an advertising agency. I've been a boarding school secretary. I've been a housemistress in a boarding school. I've done lots of things.
Housemistress in England?
In England, yes.
I don't think we have those here.
You don't have many boarding schools, do you?
No, we don't. Not that I'm aware of. Yeah, it's always somebody, when they send them, they have to go away to boarding school.
Yes.
They always say, we're sending you away to boarding school in Switzerland. That doesn't sound that bad to me. You know,
it depends on the school a bit.
I know, but still, everything's paid for. All you do is have to go to Switzerland. I would love that. My parents didn't even send me to day camp. So I never went to any place. So where else so you worked at which universities here in America?
A little bit at Northwestern and
big school, big.
Yes, and at Parkside. Right. I've been teaching at Parkside on and off since I arrived here in 2000. So the first year, and then a break, and then a few more years, and then a break, and then a few more years, and in between times teaching at places like Lake Forest College, which was nice. That's where my ex-husband used to teach. Mm. So I went back and taught there as well. So I've been off and on teaching a lot, mostly university level.
Now, you did something very unique that no other guest has ever done before. Since this is radio and there's no visual on it, we can paint a picture for you, but we can't show you the picture. You actually set something up on the website, right?
Yes.
So what do you send people there now, because we're going to talk about things, and you got to follow like a slide presentation on the website.
Almost.
We've never done that before. In 51 years in radio, I've never done that before.
Well, I thought it was a very creative idea.
It was creative. Admit. That's why you're teaching at Parkside and Northwestern, and I'm sitting here.
Oh, my Parkside job actually just came to an end because I'm humanities, and we are now being very pragmatic and very scientific, and so there's not a lot of humanities and stuff going on now.
There's not a lot of humans left around either, being human to each other.
It's true. But
so tell us, what website do they have to go to now to follow along?
Well, now, Preservation Racine has a website called preservationracine, all one word, .org. And if you go there, that front page is our events and calendar. And at the very top, there is this interview. And I made a little PDF you can open up, and it's got slides of the things that I'm hoping to talk about. And they're numbered, and I will tell you, slide number 3, slide number 22, whatever.
All
so
right.
You'll be able to have a look at them.
It's like when you used to watch a slideshow when you were in grammar school. They used to put a record on with the slide presentation, and you say, today we're going to beep. And then Johnny said to Sally, beep, keep moving it along. Okay, so give us a lowdown. Preservation Racine, I know what it is because I've done the Parade of Homes and I've done all that stuff. Mm-hmm. What is Preservation Racine? A little bit history of it.
It is obviously a preservation society. It's historic preservation. It was founded in the early 70s because we were losing a lot of architectural heritage locally at that time. And as it happened, we were coming up also to the American Bicentenary, which meant that there was a lot of national interest in preservation and in the history of America. So there were government grants, there were state grants, and there were federal grants and things. So a lot of things were possible. And at that exact moment, two or three fabulous mansions on Main Street were taken down.
Really?
And yeah. Yes, and these were the Bull Mansions and the Wadowitz Mansion. And they were enormous, and you can see those on slides 2 and 3 on our PDF, on the Preservation Racine site. Yes, ping. Yes, so they were taken down, and interestingly, they were sold by their owners. I had always thought that historic desecration happened by later developers, but in fact it was their own owners that sold them on and developed East Park Towers, which is about slide 4, I believe. So where they were is now that big block of condos that overlooks
the lake. Oh, I know where that is. Yeah.
Right by Gateway.
Yes, I do know where that is. Okay.
Yes. So now it happened when those were coming down that living opposite in the Bull Manor apartments, there was a lady called Margot Drummond, who was rather sad to see them go. And she was also doing some mature student work, and she wrote a paper suggesting that we should have some kind of a landmarks preservation commission. And at the same time, it turned out that the Junior League had proposed a similar kind of landmarks commission. For them, it was the urban aesthetics. So they all got together and produced a landmarks commission, which later became Preservation Racine. So that takes us up to about 1975, and the first president of Preservation Racine was Suzanne Foreman. I just wanted to get those two names in, Margot Drummond, Suzanne Foreman. They are big names with the foundation of Preservation Racine.
Hold it right there. We're talking to, I love Pippin. I love saying that name. I just don't know why. Because I never had a guest named Pippin in all the years I've been radio. And we're talking about Preservation Racine, the history of it. You can follow along at preservationracine.org, right?
Right.
Go to the website, preservationracine.org. There's a PDF there with a bunch of pictures. And as Pippin's talking, you can follow along with the photographs. First time I ever did this in radio. I love this idea. It's 718 at WRJN Radio, hometown radio refreshed at 1400 AM, 99.9 FM, and 98.1 FM. Keep it right here.
in sports for Racine and Kenosha, WRJN.
Governor Evers lays out his priorities for 2024 when he delivers his State of the State address. I'm News Director Terry Bell. Join Civic Media's Todd Albaugh and me as we bring you the governor's speech live, right here, Tuesday night at 7, followed by the Republican response. Todd and I will help you understand what it means for you, your family, and your community. Join us for the governor's State of the State address, Tuesday night at 7, here on your local Civic Media radio station and the Civic Media app.
Welcome to Buca's Bar and Grill, your go-to spot in Racine for hearty meals and a fantastic vibe. Friends gather, laughter fills the air, and every meal feels like a celebration. Whether you're here for a casual dinner or a night out with friends, Buca's is the place to be for our fresh, perfectly seasoned chicken wings, our mouth-watering Angus steak burgers, and our famous Friday fish fry that keeps our guests coming back for more. Your table is waiting at Buca's Bar and Grill at 4234 Douglas Avenue in Racine, just north of 3 Mile Road.
You're listening to News, Talk, and Sports for Racine and Kenosha, WRJN.
McKelly, right? Pippin McKelly is my guest, and she is, I just want to make sure I get these names right, is my guest, and we're talking about Preservation Racine this morning at 7:21 at WRJN Radio, and we have slides on the website for preservationracine.org, where you can follow along with the presentation this morning. I think this is brilliant. I think every guest should do that. Put their slides up in the morning, and we'll just follow along with them. That's great. Now, we're in 1975.
Yeah.
With the development of Preservation Racine. Two big mansions were torn down on the lakefront. That's and right. Kind of shocked.
Well, on Main Street.
On Main Street, right. Mm. On Main Street. And kind of shocked everybody.
Especially Margot Drummond, who was living opposite and watched them come down.
I hate to mention this because there's nothing really to do with this, but in New York City, I grew up in New York, there was the Rivoli Theater, which was just about to be named at 8 o'clock that morning a preserved site. Because it had the big columns. It was over 100 years old, this old theater, the Rivoli, and right there, in right off Times Square, about 49th Street, 49th and Broadway, and they had a stay on it. And they said, at 8 o'clock this morning, it's going to be preserved. They brought the wrecking ball in at 1 o'clock in the morning and knocked the columns down. And by 8 o'clock in the morning, it wasn't worth it anymore, because what they wanted to preserve were those giant columns on the building. It looked like a giant courthouse, but it was a theater. And they knocked it down at 1 o'clock in the morning, and they beat the court to the punch because they opened up for court at 8 o'clock, and they beat them. So it does happen. People do it vindictively, and they're sneaky about some of these buildings that are being torn down. And they try to do it because the land is more valuable than the building is.
Right, right. And that was the point I was going to make a bit later, but carry on.
Yeah, and yes, that's what happened right. In New York City. The land that the theater was on was much more valuable than the theater itself.
Right.
So they beat the court to the punch, and that happens sometimes.
And it happened in Racine as well.
Yeah, I'm sure it happens all over with these historic buildings. So pick up 1975.
Okay, we're at 1975, and we have a mission to identify and actively encourage the preservation of buildings, sites, and districts in the Racine County area. So we are Preservation Racine for Racine County in Wisconsin, and they have historical, architectural, and cultural value. And that brings me to my next point, which is, how do you decide what gives a building architectural, historical, or cultural value? And who gets to decide about these? And that is very apropos of what you were telling us just now about that theater in New York. So if we're not watchful, it actually happens quite a lot. If we're not watchful, no one makes a decision about these things, and they get lost or ruined for new developments. And And really, the cohesion of a cultural entity like a city or a town partly depends on its visual appearance, which encapsulates its history. That is its identity. That's one of the strong ways it gets cohesion. And the problem with our city administrators, not just in here in Racine, but just generally as a as an administrative type, and of course the developers, is that they actually have no patience with anything of that kind.
I know.
These buildings are, they are historically important because they were owned by the movers and the shakers, and the movers and the shakers took the best plots for their buildings, and now other people want those plots. And so the very buildings we need to preserve are the ones that the cities all want to knock down and replace. And obviously we can't protect them all, but somebody needs to be keeping a weather eye on it.
How do you protect it? What do? Have a court declare it a... Well, a historic landmark?
Yeah, if you can. In England, we have we list the buildings, grade one and two and three listed buildings, and there are laws controlling what gets done. So you can't just knock them down. But of course, they are very much older. You also get with those listings opportunities for grants, funding, and things, because you've got to maintain them in an authentic condition. And some of them have things like stone roofs and really very expensive to maintain. So that happens in England, and probably in many places in Europe have equivalent things. But America is very different, partly because it's a lot younger and partly because the emphasis on individual freedom is so strong that we don't have national entities that... that will protect these buildings. Now, we do have the historic register of
historic places, yeah.
Yes. But that is a register of places. It's not a... I don't believe it confers any legal protection on the buildings. I believe that is entirely in the hands of the owners.
You mean, so if you have something registered on the historic register of historic places... it's not that's not protection. That's just a note for people. Hey, you want to go see a building? Go see it.
But I think
it's not,
so.
It's not legal protection.
And yeah. Many people resist the very idea of being registered because they think then their hands are going to be tied and they won't be able to do what they want with their property. So, so it's difficult. But one of the first things that Preservation Racine did was propose this Landmarks Preservation Council, which did eventually turn into the city's Landmarks Preservation Commission. And the idea was to identify significant landmarks. There were 88 in the end that they identified that are worth protecting. Now, it wasn't a very strong ordinance, city ordinance, that protected them, but it had some protection. And then what happened in about 2007, they decided to upgrade the ordinance. I believe there was a nice grant for the city to upgrade the ordinance, and they made it better and stronger, and they failed to recognize the existing landmarks. So it didn't apply to anything. They then added two or three buildings, but that was 88 buildings that are recognized as landmarks but no longer have the protection of that ordinance. So that's the kind of thing that can happen. In my cynical way, I find it difficult to believe that nobody noticed that this strong new ordinance didn't apply to anything. I find that hard to believe, but apparently it was an accident.
Can you fight in court to keep something from being torn down, or no? Or is it that difficult to do?
It's difficult.
The owner wants to do what the owner wants to do. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Mm. So... So it is hard to protect them, but we started by trying to identify ways of recognizing cultural interest and architectural interest and so forth. Do you want me to tell you about that, or do you need to take a break?
Well, look at you.
Yeah,
you're already
look at
into
me.
Broadcasting. Yes, I do have to take a break, as a matter of fact. I have that look on my face. It says, take a break.
Poised.
Pippin McKelvey is here from Preservation Racine.
And we're talking about try to preserve our past. And that's what we're doing here with this radio station with our historical marker, WRJN Historical Marker Series. We're trying to preserve the history of this radio station for future people. You know, we do it with audio, and we'll get to talk to people, and maybe 50 years from now, they'll say, what was WRJN like in 2024, 1975? And they'll find out. 729 at WRJN Radio, hometown radio, refreshed the civic media station. I'm Don Rosen. Keep it right here. Don't move.
News Talk and Sports for Racine and Kenosha, WRJN.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
I'm Stephanie Hoff for the Midwest Farm Report along with you on a Tuesday. Every drop of milk produced in the United States is priced based on what's called the federal milk marketing orders. Now, for the first time in decades, the dairy industry, along with USDA, is looking at revising these complex rules. One problem that's been revealed is that the dairy farmers directly impacted by those orders may not even have a voice on accepting or denying the verdict. Lucas Sostrom is with Minnesota Milk and Edge Dairy Farmer Cooperative, and he explains why Wisconsin farmers might miss out on having their opportunity to vote.
If your plant did not pool during the month USDA selects, so USDA is going to select 1 month when they do the voting and say, you know, maybe it's February of 2023, that is the month. Anybody pooled in that month gets to vote nationwide, but anybody not pooled in that month doesn't get to vote. So that's a huge disadvantage for the Upper Midwest, because in the Northeast and the Southeast, they're all going to be pooled. We're going to be disenfranchised somewhat as voters, and you know our Edge members, there's been a lot of depooling here in the past couple of years.
Yeah.
So everything we've been complaining about, the members who were really affected the most might not even have a vote on the issue.
This week marks the 11th week that USDA has been gathering testimony. Lucas Sostrom with Minnesota Milk and Edge Dairy Farmer Cooperative says no one is sure when they'll conclude the process. I've got more farm news on the way.
Fabulous Farm Babe, glad to be joined in studio today by Doug Munson. He is the gentleman that is working in conjunction with the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board to make things happen here in the state of Wisconsin. What starts in Wisconsin can have a ripple effect across the United States.
That's what we always hope for it is, what are those ripple effects? You know, for every dollar that's invested, it's a return of $12.34. You know, how those investments really bring value, they can be debated or they can be looked at in many different ways. Biodiesel brings, I think we say over a dollar now, you know, years ago before inflation, we'll say, it was 63 cents to a bushel of soybeans that brought that value. Whether it's 63 cents or it's a dollar, it's $1.34, which we've heard as high as that amount, that's a huge amount of value to your bushel of soybeans. So those are the things that are ripple effects, right? That can start in Wisconsin or sometimes at the national level, but have big impact in the world of soybean.
Doug Munson, in studio with me on behalf of the Wisconsin Soybean Association and the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board, the financial driving force behind our research that's done here in the state of Wisconsin. For more, pop on over to cornsoyexpo.org.
You hear from us all the time. Well, we want to hear from you, too. If you've got a story idea or want to tell us what's going on the farm, send us a text through our talk text line. That number is 877-301-3276. Something we're talking about today. Tomorrow, the Farmer Veteran Coalition of Wisconsin is hosting its winter conference. This will be at the new Food and Farm Exploration Center in Plover. Whether you're planning to expand or are interested in fine-tuning your financial awareness, there is something for everyone. Just be sure to register in advance. Find those details at MidwestFarmReport.com. I'm Stephanie Hoff.
News, talk, and sports for Racine and Kenosha, WRJN. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected to your local community. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
Did you know there's a building described as being the hottest in Racine County? It's the Firehouse Museum, built in 1882 on 6th Street in Racine. Museum volunteer Steve Salvo tells host Don Rosen it's a really special place for fire history.
It's one of those hidden treasures in Racine people don't know about.
I think we really are.
And Salvo says there's surprises for visitors, too.
The fact that the horses that pulled the fire apparatus actually lived in the building with the firefighters.
Special events are held at the museum, too, and you can learn all about it at RacineFireBells.org. RacineFireBells.org. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
It is going to be a little messy out there today. We have a winter weather advisory in effect. Rain and snow likely off and on through the day. We could get it between a quarter and a half inch of liquid precip. Maybe some minor slushy accumulation, but definitely enough to mess up the roads a bit. 35 today, 33 tonight. Warm enough for rain tomorrow. Scattered.
If you do want me, give me a little sugar. If you don't want me, don't leave me on down. But if you need me, show me that you love me. Just give me some kind of sign, girl. Oh, my baby, just show me that you're mine, girl. Oh, yeah. Just give me some kind of sign, girl. Oh, my darling, just show me that you're mine, girl. All right. If you do want me, give me a little sweet talk. If you don't want
735 at WRJN Radio. Pippin McKelly is here. McKelly. Pippin McKelly. I love that name, Pippin. Is that a common name in England, Pippin?
No,
or, no, I didn't think so. you don't see nobody.
Actually, it's the name of Charlemagne's father.
See, that's something only you would know. I wouldn't know that. And Pippin is here from Preservation Racine. And we have very, by the way, you can follow along on the website, preservationracine.org. Preservationracine.org. There's a slideshow there. And when we're talking, you can go to the slides and see what's going on here. And also, when it'll be podcast later today, you can also follow along on the slides as well with the podcast. Now, here's an interesting question. Who decides what's culturally important and not? Is there a committee? Is there a person? Who decides?
And the answer to that is if we don't keep an eye on things, nobody decides. And the people who decide what they're going to do with the various plots of land are the city planners, which are not particularly Racine city planners, but city planners in general and outside developers generally want the plots for their new lucrative developments, and they don't have a lot of time for the historical or the architectural or the aesthetic value of what's already there.
So who goes to the city planners and say, wait a second here, you're going
to... Well, that's yeah. what Preservation Racine gave itself that mission to be a watchdog, amongst other things. So we helped to set up that original set of 88 landmarks. But what makes them a landmark, I wanted to say, really, was that the styles are so interesting and varied. And the reason they're interesting is that they very often reflect the political and professional stances of their owners, the people who paid to have them put up. And so I was going to say, for example, that, you know, if it's the establishment, you're looking at Roman styles, sort of combination Greek and Roman, like city, state capitals, that kind of thing, columns and domes coming together, you get those. They are classicizing styles. But now in farms and small towns like Racine, the Italianate became very popular, and that is a largely plain house, vertically aligned windows, round-topped. They've got a ridge of bricks over the top.
Yeah.
Very often they've got, the decoration is all in the wood. You've got wooden covered porches, you've got big brackets under the eaves, you've got, brackets and porches, bay windows added onto the edge onto the walls in wood. So now a good example of that is the Blake House, which is our headquarters. That's at 936 Main Street, and you will find that on slide 8. It's a great example, and I want to give you something about actually the history of it, because on slide 9, immediately afterwards, you'll see a very similar design by an architect called Henry Hudson Holly. And it was designed much the same time that this building was constructed. We don't know who the architect was. And Hudson Holly would sell patterns. So it's quite possible that he or someone like him designed this building. And what he said about it was that this was perfect to be used in those beautiful little towns where manufacturing has become the chief interest of the inhabitants, and where industry and enterprise have received their proverbial reward. So it could practically be describing Racine. And what's interesting is that the house was built for an early dry goods owner, Bull, on Main Street, and it was then acquired by Lucius Blake, who was one of the big industrial magnates of Racine, and has been said actually to have given Racine its start in industry. So the design of that house and the things that have been officially said about it and the man who actually owned it, they all come together really very nicely there. But then if you were to look at, for example, arts and crafts type, prairie type houses like the Hardy House, which is on slide 10, those tended to be favoured by progressive types. So you want to keep a good range of styles and types of buildings, because they're containing the history, they're containing the politics and the past of the town, the whole identity. We want to keep not just one, but several.
Now, people are familiar with, on Main Street, the Frank Lloyd Wright House.
Right, that's it. That's the Hardy House.
That's the Hardy House?
Yes.
Okay. And I can't imagine anybody ever tearing that down. I mean,
not that one. It's too famous.
Right. I was on the parade of homes that the Preservation Racine held, and we went in there.
Yes.
For some reason, it's not meant for tall people. I don't know why.
No. Well, Frank Lloyd Wright was not a tall man.
I know. So I'm going through there, and I'm watching the ceiling, and I'm going to bang my head on anything going through. But it's right there on Main Street, and it looks like a Frank Lloyd Wright house from the outside. It's got that square and boxy look to it.
Right.
And it's right there in the lakefront. It's got to be worth a fortune being right there on the lakefront. But that's, no one's going to mess with that one. So that one's safe.
Not that one.
Yeah.
But we have other prairie style and
arts and crafts. Is that what you call a prairie style house?
Frank Lloyd Wright is associated with the prairie style, yes. The difference between prairie and arts and crafts, actually, you just have to look a bit closely at them. They look very similar, but for arts and crafts, it's all about how the building holds itself together. So it's all structure. You can see how the pieces ostensibly interlock with each other. That you can see that on an arts and crafts house. On a prairie house, very, very similar, but you cannot see how the pieces come together. And instead, they seem to sort of float apart or cut through each other. But there's no logical construction expressed on the outside. So that Hardy House is a prairie-style house, and the decoration of the house is decoration that floats on the wall. The windows float. There's nothing apparently supporting them as there would be on an arts and crafts house.
So how do people know if they have a house that needs to be preserved? I live in a house that's about 114 years old. My house is pretty old, but it's nothing spectacular. It's just a house that was built by a sea captain back in the early 1900s, he was lived on Chatham, then he moved to North Maine and built my house. So I know a little bit of the history of it. When we had to replace one of the walls, I looked inside for artifacts. Maybe some gold doubloons were hidden in the walls. Nothing was there. Anyway, so how do people contact you and say, listen, I think I may have an historic home here?
People do that, yes. You can easily contact us for something like that. You just email info at preservationracine.org, and someone will get back to you, whether it's about research or finding out about tour tickets or what our program is or anything of that kind.
And you could find out about your home. I think it was the public library we went to. You go into this room, they put you white gloves on you, and you can look through some of the books.
Mm-hmm.
And the old books, like we would think of a phone book, used to have the person's occupation in there.
Right.
Which seems
the
kind
city
of,
directories.
Yeah, it seems kind of odd by today. That's how we knew our home was owned and built by a sea captain
in
Lake Michigan. That's why I thought we'd find gold doubloons or treasures in the wall. We found nothing. So so people can call and contact you, info@racinepreservation.org.
Right.
If you think you have a question about your house, you think you may have some kind of historic home here. And there are probably a lot of them here because Racine was settled pretty early on.
It was the industrial capital, wasn't it?
Because it was on the lake.
Yes.
That's got a lot to do with it. So what are some of the buildings Preservation Racine has saved over the years?
We have saved, I think the most important ones are, yes, the Blake House, of course, which I keep mentioning.
Now, Blake House is where now?
The Blake House is on 936 Main Street. It's right opposite the Christmas House.
Oh, yeah, Christmas House for Cancer, okay.
Right. That is slide 8 on the PDF. It was built for George Bull, 1868, acquired by the Blakes in 1873. And Bull was the dry goods merchant, and Blake was the major industrialist, so we've mentioned those. Now, Blake had a son, Byron Blake, and he built a house at 102 10th Street, so that's right on the corner by Gatewick College. And that was Blake's son, Byron, and we saved that one. And we have, the Georgian Revival State Street Train Depot was another one that we were very much involved in saving. So I think those three are really important.
I went through there. The State Street, that's where the buses are, the bus depot.
Yes.
If you go inside the actual waiting room,
right,
it's beautiful inside with historic photographs on the wall.
Right.
I've been there. I don't know. What was I doing there?
I don't know, but we've had programs there, so maybe.
Maybe I went to one of them. I was in there, and it is gorgeous. So even if you don't want to take a bus anywhere, stop by. There's a parking lot. Get in there and take a look around at some of the photographs on the wall, and I'll show you what history was like at that train. It was a train station at one time.
It was. It was, and it's still functioning as a bus terminal.
As a bus terminal,
and
I
believe there are rumors about the renewed rumors about a train.
Kenosha to Milwaukee. Yeah,
it may actually become a train station.
That's
again.
We just had a story on that the other day. They're still working on it. They want to do connect to the metro in Chicago through Kenosha, through Racine into Milwaukee, and have one complete train route going through.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So that would be exciting. So
what else have you seen?
Let me see. So the train depot, slides 12 and 13. What else? Those ones we campaigned for. We've invested in them. We've put sweat equity in them. And the Blake House is one of those, and that incidentally has some very affordable apartments in its upstairs. It has our offices downstairs. It has apartments upstairs that are affordable to rent. And we do actually happen to have a couple of vacancies right now. So if anyone's interested, write to us, info@preservationracine.org. You never know. You might pick up a nice historic place. It's only a couple of blocks from downtown Main Street. So if you want to live there in a nice historic area, opportunity.
George Washington didn't sleep there. However, Mary Todd Lincoln was in Racine.
She was, yes.
And she was at the Covin Center. Wasn't that where she went?
She was at the Congress Hotel.
The Congress Hotel, but I thought she was doing something at
the
Covin.
She was considering sending her son to the De Covin to Racine College. She decided against that.
So where was the Congress Hotel located?
Chatham Lake. I don't know.
You didn't expect
something like eighth. No, I didn't.
You didn't expect to get a quiz when you were.
No, but somewhere on the south side of the river, and on Lake.
I gotta look
Avenue.
That up. Yes, I didn't know she stayed there. Well, you knew that part. That was very good.
Oh, I did, and I happened to have already researched the woman who was working there at the time, a lady who seems to have been a remarkable adventuress and landlady of various places of better and worse repute, and she finished up at the Congress Hotel, married to the guy who owned it. And Mary Todd Lincoln thought that that mine host and his wife were very, very good to her.
I just found out the other day there's only one statue in all of the United States of Mary Todd Lincoln and President Lincoln together.
And it's here.
It's in Racine.
It is.
My wife told me that the other day.
Oh,
and
right.
I said, how did you know that? And I didn't know that. Because she's smarter than I am. That's how she's doing.
We have a Lincoln expert in Racine, you know, Steve Rogstad.
Okay.
Past president of Preservation Racine, and he's written some books about it, about Lincoln and that statue.
If you have questions for Pippin or anybody with Preservation Racine, info at preservationracine.org. That's info at preservationracine.org. Say, Rao, where you are. It's WRJN Radio on your Tuesday morning. It's 7:49. And this is Hometown Radio Refreshed, a Civic Media station. 1400 AM, 99.9 FM, 98.1 FM. WRJN, stay where you are. Don't move.
Listening to news, talk, and sports for Racine and Kenosha, WRJN. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected to your local community. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
Did you know there's a building described as being the hottest in Racine County? It's the Firehouse Museum, built in 1882 on 6th Street in Racine. Museum volunteer Steve Salvo tells host Don Rosen it's a really special place for fire history.
It's one of those hidden treasures in Racine people don't know about.
I think we really are.
And Salvo says there's surprises for visitors, too.
The fact that the horses that pulled the fire apparatus actually lived in the building with the firefighters.
Special events are held at the museum, too, and you can learn all about it at RacineFireBells.org. RacineFireBells.org. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
This is News Talk and Sports for Racine and Kenosha, WRJN.
McKelvey is here. McKelly. Pippin McKelly. I get that right. It's the name Pippin that throws me off every time, from Preservation Racine. And we wanted to talk about the Capitol Theater. That's something everybody's passed a million times right there on Highway 20, Washington Avenue, the Capitol Theater. That was the Capitol, right?
Yeah. It was the Capitol Theater.
And now it was a karate school at one time. It's been a lot of things. And now it's nothing. There was a big to-do about tearing down the theater, not tearing it down. Let's talk about the Capitol's history here.
Yeah, this one I think is rather tragic. It was at 3014 Washington Avenue, and you'll see it on slides 20 and 21. You can see the exterior and the interior and a shot of the demolition. It was a kind of minimal Romanesque style on the outside, brick Romanesque, and it had inside the most wonderful carved and painted proscenium, and I put a photograph of a detail of that proscenium on the PDF, and it was still intact. And the decor on the walls, almost complete, and we could have reconstructed the rest. The building It was constructed in 1927. They had just brought in new codes for theatres at that time. It was built like a bomb shelter. They had to be by national law at that point. And it was built by the grandfather of one of our members, Judith Schultz. And it needed work, no doubt. It had fallen into drabness, shall we say. And it certainly wasn't looking good on the inside. It had had various things in it. At one point, it had a textile printing business in it, and it also had the Hope Safe House for rescued animals. Anyway, the city had decided that it was in dangerous condition, and in fact it wasn't. We had civil engineers come and have a look at it. It's not in dangerous condition. The roof that was supposed to have fallen down was actually an interior false ceiling in one of the rooms, and yeah, the tiles had sort of warped and slipped out. The place was grungy. It needed work, but it was sound, and we had raised 50,000 something along there, 50,000 to bring it to code. It was bringable up to code at that point, and we planned a long term fundraising and development program for the future. And sadly, we just could not get through to the city. They never seemed to get the message, and they had it raised in 2021. And what was really interesting is that the company that raised it was the same company, different generation, same company that raised the Venetian Theatre. And the same story got told about the Venetian Theatre, that it was dilapidated, it was unsafe. And yet it took them 3 days to make a crack in the Venetian Theatre, and they broke the wrecking ball. And at the Park Capitol Theatre, they broke the backhoe that was busy taking it down. So these things are built like bomb shelters, and don't let anyone tell you that they're not safe.
Boy, this, you took this personally.
I did.
I could tell by the way you're talking now.
Absolutely. I was out there parading in the snow trying to...
Happy Pippin came into the radio station. Angry Pippin's leaving the radio station. I could tell. I see steam coming out of your ears when you're talking about this.
Well, it was sad.
Well, and it was sad.
Although, the Venetian clearly was in a league of its own compared with the Capitol Theatre, but the Capitol Theatre was what we had left, and we could have saved it. And one of the issues, actually, which is worth pointing out, is that it was behind with its taxes. The owner had fallen behind with his taxes. He was still paying taxes, but he was not up to date.
He was in arrears, yeah.
He was in arrears, yes. And the city kept saying, we are out those taxes, and the fact is that they're not out anyone's arrears taxes or delinquent taxes, because the county pays those taxes, and the issue is between the owner and the county, but the city gets those taxes.
In the last 2 minutes, I want to get, you have an event coming up. You have one in September, but any other events coming up we need to know about right away?
Not that I can tell you straight away, but that front page of the website will tell you our calendar. We're about to have a program meeting in February. That'll go up in the next couple of minutes.
But the Parade of Homes comes up in September every year.
Yes, the Parade of Homes comes up in September, yes.
And so usually it's just a walking tour, but sometimes you got to take your car to the next location. But sometimes just it's walking. And
yes.
It's always done, hopefully, on a nice day.
Yes,
and
very often.
It's done in the fall, which
yes.
is very nice. And I said to you during the break, I don't know how these people let you walk through their homes. First of all, a lot of them require you to take off your shoes, which is fair. But I wouldn't let anybody walk through my home. So bless these people that say yes to this. They're very nice people.
They're lovely people.
And they realize there's an historic importance
well,
to their
home.
And
they love their homes, and they're proud of them. And so they're happy to show them. Some of them go on the market a little bit later. We don't usually know about if we know it's going on the market, we don't put it on the tour. But sometimes they go on the market.
Yeah, but then you have an open house, you can go through it. Anybody can go through an open house.
That's right.
Also, my wife, when she took the tour 1 year without me, people don't realize this, but down in Monument Square, those apartment buildings there, those buildings, they all have like rooftop gardens on the top. There are apartments up there. It's beautiful. I was up there once. It's like a rooftop garden. Who knew about that stuff? I don't know about it.
gorgeous apartments above and, most of those shops.
And you find out about it when you go on the Parade of Homes tour.
Right.
And you find out some really beautiful homes. You get to know what's going on in your own city. That you probably pass these places every single day, but you don't know any history behind it. And it's really nice. And again, the nice people who let you go schlepping through their homes, I think that's wonderful. I got to have you back. We just barely touched the surface.
We're out of time, are we?
Yeah.
Just about.
I know we barely touched. I know it goes by.
Let me mention the Century Buildings.
Hurry together. 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Century Buildings in May every year. Buildings that are 100 years old and still in representative condition or newly restored into it. Lovely celebration.
And when's that?
It is in May.
Okay.
It's one of our program meetings in May, and it will be on the website, and it will be announced.
We'll have you back when you get the programming all set. My home's over 100 years old. I'm not letting anybody go schlepping through it, though.
Yes, you will. You'd be surprised.
Pippin and Kelly, thank you very much for coming in.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for sliding on the sidewalk to get into our building. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pippin. I'm Don Rosen. Tomorrow, David Mack, one of our candidates for 4th District Alderman, going to be here in studio. You guys have a wonderful day today. Civic Media Station, Hometown Radio Refreshed, WRJN.
On air, online, and on the Civic Media app.
Battle stations, everybody. Let's go, go,
this
go, go,
is 1400 AM and 99.9 and 98.1 FM, WRJN.
This is your Hometown Radio Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
To the big-hearted, the bold, the teachers, the growers, the builders, the change makers. We need you. We are the Peace Corps. In more than 60 countries, we go the distance to make a difference. We're volunteers, partners, communities, bringing our experience, joy, and passion to building a better world together. Are you looking for more? Then we are looking for you. Join us at peacecorps.gov.
Your home for the Packers.
1400 AM WRJN Racine, 99.9 FM W260CV Racine, and 98.1 FM W251BU Kenosha.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.